podcast from the North Carolina School Boards Association. I'm Leanne Winner, the association's executive director and your host. Here on the board table, we want to equip North Carolina school board members with the tools and knowledge they need to govern successfully. We also want to help school administrators, community members, and parents learn more about current issues in public education. Over the last few years, there has been an increase in the frequency of active shooter events in schools and other similar settings. In this episode of The Board Table, Donna Lynch, NCSBA's litigation counsel and manager of the North Carolina School Boards Trust, leads a discussion on prevention planning and response to school shooting events. Donna is joined by Paul Marshall, the creator of the Active Shooter Crisis Risk Program at McGowan Program Administrators, and Mike McClanahan from Victor Insurance, who serves as the longtime broker for the North Carolina School Boards Trust, otherwise known as NCSBT. Let's listen in.
Thank you, Leanne. Hello to our listeners, and thank you for tuning in to today's podcast, The Active Shooter Event, Prevention, Planning, and Response. I'm Donna Lynch, litigation counsel and director of NCSBA's Risk Management Department, where I oversee the North Carolina School Boards Trust Risk Management Program for North Carolina Boards of Education. The Trust is a member-funded, member-managed program which offers participating boards of education an alternative to commercial insurance for managing their various risks. This year, the Trust, or NCSBT as we refer to it, is celebrating its 40th year of partnering with North Carolina Boards of Education in providing various risk management protection and services. Today, I'm pleased to be joined in this podcast by Paul Marshall and Mike McClanahan. Paul is the managing director with McGowan Program Administrator and has over 30 years experience in risk management and insurance. Paul started McGowan's Active Shooter Crisis Risk Program back in 2015 as a response to recent shooting events and lack of crisis response insurance in the industry. McGowan Programs has become the largest U.S. underwriter for this line of crisis response coverage and has been highlighted in recent articles, including the Wall Street Journal, Risk and Insurance, and in Prima, better known as Public Risk Management Association. We're pleased to have Paul joining us today. Mike McClanahan is Vice President and Public Entity Program Manager with Victor Insurance. Mike has over 25 years experience in underwriting and brokerage services, the last 15 of which has been devoted to public entity clients and pooling partners. Mike's areas of expertise include underwriting, reinsurance program negotiating, and individual brokered account services. He has been the long-term partner in placing reinsurance for the NCSBT programs, and he assists NCSBT and our members with various other specialty insurance needs. At the outset today, I do want to remind our listeners that this podcast is intended as an informational podcast to provide various risk management information. It is not intended as legal advice. As always, if you have legal questions, you should consult with your legal counsel. In today's podcast, we will share information on planning, prevention planning, and response related to school shooting events, which have been increasing in frequency in recent years. According to a recent Education Week article, the Education Week's school shooting tracker reports that since January of this year, there have been more than 27 school shootings across the United States, resulting in 27 deaths and 56 injuries. These events have been increasing in frequency, and some of the more high-profile events that you all have heard about are the more than likely Oxford High School shooting in Michigan, the Uvalde Elementary School shooting in Texas this year, and of course, the Parkland High School shooting in Florida back in 2018. So now I'd like to turn this over to Paul. Paul, given the increasing frequency of school shooting events and other shooting events that have been going on across the country, how have you seen schools responding to these events from your perspective?
Yeah, thanks so much. And thanks for having me on for this podcast. I think it's going to be very informative. We've had a tremendous amount of attention on these mass shootings, but then also general acts of violence in school systems. But then also to give a little bit of backdrop, we've seen a large increase across the board in every industry. So to help ease the mind of school systems, even though we've had nice uptick and the awareness is at all-time high, more and additional industries are also seeing this. So it does seem that the trend is going to be increasing, and we're witnessing what I feel is kind of a COVID effect, that we had this pent-up amount of anxiety, political violence type scenarios, people just being upset, more and more annoyed. And you find that people are acting out, whether it be in shopping centers up at, Buffalo, New York, horrific shooting event up there, or Valdiv Elementary School shooting. There was just another shooting this weekend. And so I think we're seeing just a general uptick in public violence, and maybe people just not knowing how to handle it as well. That's a really good question that we're talking about this.
So, Paul, there's obviously a lot of reaction when an event occurs, and there's a lot of disbelief, but there's also a lot of discussion of, how could this have been prevented? In the work that you do and working with the various entities that have the unfortunate experience of having an event, is there a common thread, or are there common deficiencies that you think kind of go across all these events that may have been something that could have prevented the active shooter event?
Another great question. So, it's pretty easy to play, Sunday afternoon quarterback, on the couch, right? And we find that the news articles, the news reports post-event can be very, very critical. We are seeing some of the deficiencies is the lack of communication that you may have with a crisis individual, that people are made aware of an individual that may have the chemistry, the background, and indications that they're going to be acting in a violent nature. And that's kind of a blind eye is turned to it, as opposed to increased awareness. I think we found this out, especially in the Michigan shooting, where there were lots of reports, and even down in the Parkland shooting, where there were reports of the individual or the families having a violent tendency or a mental health type scenario, and that didn't get to the proper authorities. So as we dig into these events, and these again at school systems, the mall shootings or market shootings, one of the elements is the lack of response to some of the indicators. Now, easily implemented controls that we can look into. One, a see something, say something app, which a security firm rolled out basically to implement giving teachers an easy way to identify a potential hostile situation or an individual acting out in a violent way. Whereas in the past, one of our largest school systems in Florida, 200,000 students, 185 actual school buildings, prior to us having this discussion with them, they realized that the teachers did have a panic button, but they would have to go onto the computer. Oh, by the way, not every teacher had a computer in their classroom, okay? But then they had to log in with a password to notify an administrator who may or may not be at his or her computer, let alone having the teacher responsible memorizing a password in a very traumatic event. So post-discussions, one of the easy corrections was every teacher had a see something, say something app on their phone. If they, for some reason, didn't have their personal phone, they were given a phone. And that way, every employee in that campus had a very easy way to notify of a potential situation. They are now looking at rolling that out and providing students the ability to identify someone who's not quite acting right, or especially if someone who didn't belong, a stranger is walking through the campus. This some of the universities are looking at this technology as well, using more of a social media type response where they can identify someone and then alert authorities to take special actions. So those are a couple of the very simplest responses. And the good news is those do not cost much money at all, you know, and it can be implemented very, very quickly. So that's a great question, Mike.
Paul, despite all the loss prevention efforts that can be made to try to prevent these types of events from occurring, it's not possible to prevent an event with 100% certainty. Mm-hmm. So are there some things that a school district can do to be prepared for responding to an event should one occur?
So now we have the lightning strike or hurricane preparedness concept or the flood preparedness. Everyone has it in a crisis management book, right? And you can prevent these things from happening as best you can. See something, say something app. You can have weapons detection system in the front of the doors, but someone's going to prop a door open, right? Like we have seen in a lot of these recent shootings. And the locks on the doors don't help if someone props a door open and a stranger gets in. Or similar to some of the shootings, the perpetrator is amongst them, right? So where you have a laid off or terminated employee that has become hostile, or that student that was basically terminated or is on suspension due to acting out, they some way somehow find the way in the building. So these events are extremely difficult to stop. And what we really need to have is a crisis management booklet, or at least a chapter dedicated to active shooter workplace violence events. And these will include very briefly a workplace violence policy, right? A written policy of, you know, workplace violence is not permitted. A weapons policy, you know, are weapons permitted or are they not? You need to inform and train your employees and students of how to respond to this event. You know, you need to limit the access to the buildings as best as possible. As we figured out, that's not going to prevent it, but it will lessen the scrutiny that the media will have on your location and your management team. Example, outside of a school system, the Walmart shooting in El Paso, if you remember, the media shows up that day and they're interviewing employees. And a simple question was, when was the last time you had active shooter training? And almost 100% of all the employees said, we've never had any type of training. We didn't know what to do. And that is not what you want to be released to the public post-event. So you want to have this training over and over and over again and try to prepare as best as you can. And then we can kind of get a little bit more into that. We got some other questions that we can touch on that as well. But that's a real good question, Donna.
Paul, with everything that you can try and do in advance to prevent an event and different critical controls and some sort of plan in place, after an event, there's going to be losses. There's losses of life. There's losses of various things that you have to do after an event. What are some of the expenses and costs that are associated with an event that most people probably don't think about? You know, obviously the loss of life is the focus, and you can't put a number on that. But, you know, as an entity tries to recover from an event, what are some of the things that they have to go through and perhaps can think about in advance?
Yeah, so we don't like to think about this, but, you know, these shooting events are extremely expensive to the public and to individuals and to families. Gunshot wounds are one of the most costly things that you can have in the emergency room, trauma care. You know, the immediate response to these shootings is one, I kind of touched on a little bit, but to have a disaster recovery plan workbook of one, who's going to be the point person? Okay, this is post when things are under control and the police and law enforcement have secured the building. Up until that point, it doesn't matter what you have planned because they are in control. Once they release the building and students, right, back to you, the management team, and that's what will happen. They will release them back to you, right? Now you have a reunification plan of parents wanting to come on campus, pick their kids up. You'll have a backlog of phone calls of people wanting to know what's going on, right? Again, up until that point, the law enforcement do a very good job of managing the situation and keeping people at bay. And then you'll have this immediate response team that's going to be needed. And so this is something that we need to plan out. Who's going to be the point person to be the person in front of the microphone? A lot of organizations think that, well, it's the principal or it's the administrator. And we all know principals and administrators who should not be in front of the microphone. Okay, right? So it does not have to be that the number one in an organization. It can be a number two, a number three, or someone designated as chief risk officer or public relations. Someone who is trained, as we have witnessed politicians over the years, some get it and some just don't get it, right? We want someone that is comfortable, confident in front of the public, reassuring, but then also knows what he or she can say, but more importantly, what he or she should not say. And there's all kinds of training manuals regarding this. OSHA, Homeland Security, they actually do a very good job of coaching that initial response because they're trying to prevent additional crisis and trauma for people saying stuff on the line, right? And so there's not a reorientation of crisis, or the police aren't flooded, such as, well, you're going to have to talk to the police about that. Well, you know, the police might be saying, that's not our job. You know, that's the administration job. So there's a lot of how-to guides of how to respond. Certainly, we have a trained team that can respond on behalf of an organization that we insure. Many times there's lots of attorneys and lawyers and PR firms that specialize in any of these type of crisis events. Very, very good question, and one that people should think about.
On this topic of cost and expenses, I do want to comment about that from the trust perspective. Back in 2020, we did work with Paul and through Mike in securing an active shooter workplace violence crisis response group policy for members of the North Carolina School Board's Trust Arizona Admissions General Liability Fund to help provide some crisis response benefits for the members of our program in the event that they needed those crisis response benefits because of some of these expenses that Paul has mentioned. In the event there was a crisis for those districts, there are many expenses. That group policy that was secured, the Board of Trustees for the trust approved the purchase of this policy, and it provides crisis response benefits to members of the program for a variety of types of response coverages, such as the victim coverages that Paul mentioned, all of the medical and rehab expenses that might be incurred by victims of a crisis in a school shooting event, death benefits, funeral expenses. Those types of things are covered under this crisis response policy. There are also, as Paul mentioned, numerous expenses to the district, the public relations council that might be needed, crisis consultant expenses, other business interruption expenses to the district, employee counseling, special security that might be needed. All of those types of extra expenses fall under this crisis response group policy. And we were pleased that the trustees secured that policy in the unfortunate event that our members ever have to utilize that. But given the escalation of these events, we realized that they did not have that coverage in place. And it, unfortunately, a coverage that seems to be a necessary part of the risk management plan in today's world.
Yeah. And Donna, can I just on your comments kind of identify a couple of the key aspects of that, the coverages that you mentioned? Because a lot of people miss when I talked about the public relations and more kind of protecting the organization. A lot of the most recent claims we've had, the largest expense item have been the victim coverages. is going out and then on behalf of the organization in the school system, taking care of the victims' medical bills, trauma counseling, providing nurses and care counselors for individuals that haven't been hurt but just need to talk to somebody. And again, this is students and employees, teachers. Many times the teachers are just as traumatized, and you need to implement a nice plan of a get back to work plan, because they need to hold it together when the first day of school is back, right? And they need to exude that confidence. The other item that, you know, we work with is kind of these non-tangible costs where, you know, we were involved in a drive-by shooting in the South Carolina area, first day of school a year ago, and it was a middle school. A couple of the children were shot in the leg, you know, nothing fatal, but the policies responded wonderfully as far as being right there with the families, right? And some of the parents had to take off work because their kids were in the hospital. They paid for lost wages and the trauma counseling, the medical bills. But one thing they did, they sensed through the counselors that there was a fear on the children because it was the first day of school. And so they volunteered to buy all the middle school students new backpacks, clear backpacks, at the expense of the program. And while, you know, some may question, well, is this really providing a level of safety? That wasn't the purpose. The purpose was to provide something to the children that says, hey, we're doing something a little bit different. And it did help the kids, it helped the parents, it helped the community say, okay, this was a nice action item. And now I think since then, you've seen a lot of school systems around the country encouraging clear backpacks and that kind of stuff, because from a psychological standpoint, it has seemed to help. So, you know, I just wanted to touch base on those couple things.
Thank you, Paul.
We clearly have only just scratched the surface of so many different topics, and things go a whole lot deeper. And we've mentioned ways to prevent, how do you respond, some of the different expenses and things of that sort that come up. But clearly, you know, this topic goes much deeper. Paul, are there resources that school districts can go to and just kind of dive into this, kind of, you know, get a good grasp on the big picture to zero in on some of the things that they want to do? Are there different areas that they could go to kind of do a little bit of research on their own, you know, to get their plan started?
Yeah, the good news is that there are a tremendous amount of resources that are out there now for organizations to build their own crisis response manual. You know, OSHA is one of the leading resources out there because they have a lot of stake in the game with, you know, work comp, and this is a, you know, a potential huge loss for them as far as, you know, employee claims and those type of things. So they have taken the reins to step in for any type of workplace violence. And this includes, you know, shootings, bomb threats, you know, any type of weapon type attack. They even, I think, added an element as far as drones and public settings and those type of things. The other group out there, Homeland Security, and they've kind of been on the lead as far as developing these run, hide, fight type videos, actually pace at, you know, at your own pace learning templates that organizations can send their employees online training that you can walk through at your own pace. So, and they're constantly updating those resources based on, you know, items that come up. I'll be walking through a lot of those, Mike. You know, I've been invited down to the, you know, annual conference for the NCSBA members. And this is going to be a big topic of walking through all the resources. And we can go through kind of in generalities how to build a crisis response manual for these situations. And that way it'll help and certainly help in the response.
Thank you both, Paul and Mike, for this helpful information. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in to our podcast today on active shooter prevention and planning. These are certainly challenging times for school leaders who are planning and preparing for this new school year. And we hope that you found this discussion somewhat helpful as you deal with this topic. As we've mentioned earlier, there's some links to some of the resources that Paul has mentioned. We're going to have these posted on the risk management page of the NCSBA website at www.ncsba.org. And as Paul mentioned, he will be attending the NCSBA annual conference in November in Greensboro to provide additional discussion on this topic. We hope you'll join us there. Thank you again for listening.
Thank you, Donna, Paul, and Mike, for that very informative session. Unfortunately, given the current times, schools must be prepared for the possibility of such events and need to take the necessary steps to guard against them as best they can. Have you ever heard the saying, if you're not at the table, then you're on the menu? Subscribe to this podcast to make sure you always have a seat at the table. If there's a topic you want us to cover in a future episode of The Board Table, let us know. You can find us on Twitter at NCSBA, Facebook at NC School Boards Association, or email us at info@ncsba.org. Until next time.